All right, glad you're with us. And write down our toll-free telephone numbers. We'd love to hear from you. It's 800-941-SHAWN if you want to be a part of the program. We have a real dangerous situation evolving down in Tijuana at the border with Mexico, as the people of Tijuana are absolutely apoplectic, angry. They're using the words that they feel like they were invaded. Now, thousands of these migrants have descended upon this town, and there's no means by which to take care of them. And the people are very angry and frustrated, and you can see tempers are beginning to flare, and it's not looking good. And this is what the president was saying was going to happen potentially here. Now, if the president didn't see that they were marching and saying, telegraphing, we're going to the American border, and the president didn't act, he would have been blamed for that. But the president has said in the military, they have laid down miles and miles and miles and miles worth of, it's not even barbed wire, it's razor wire, which is very difficult to cut, get through. And obviously, we have other means of watching people if they try to vandalize it. Very different situation than the fence that was down in southern Mexico that the migrants plowed through and just ran across the border, bulldozing any police or military in Mexico on the way. And it's literally now months and months and months before anybody's ever going to get any opportunity to have any type of asylum hearing. The fact that we give countries like El Salvador and Nicaragua, Honduras, all of this money, and they allowed it to happen. They didn't stop it. Mexico didn't stop it. They had every opportunity to do so. Now Mexico finds themselves in the middle of it based on their own actions. All right, we're going to get into all of that today. You know, I'm beginning to realize that I have to explain the election results again, because some people have no clue how great this year had turned out for Donald Trump and Republicans. And I'm not saying it was perfect, but I am saying it looks like there were three outstanding House races, one already called in Texas for the Republican. It looks like Mia Love will win in Utah and Woodall will win in Georgia. And it's so funny. I'll get to the numbers in a second. I'll explain all of that. We have a lot of deep state news that I want to get to in the course of the program today. Has anyone but myself noticed that Michael Avenatti is not showing up very much on any of his favorite cable TV shows? I mean, over 200 media appearances total, most of them on MSNBC and CNN on a regular basis. Funny how these networks, not only is he not showing up, considering he was so in the forefront of laying out the most outrageous allegations against Brett Kavanaugh. Remember, he was representing Julie Swetnick, and he was the one that's saying this guy's a rapist, and when he was in high school, and we have the evidence, and we have the proof, and we're going to corroborate it, and it's all there, and he files an affidavit, and then Ms. Swetnick ends up doing an interview, and, well, what do we find out? She starts changing her story dramatically and quickly when questioned, and the people that she mentions and names as possible witnesses to these most outrageous charges, well, they're either dead or don't know who the hell she is. And that was the almost on a weekend basis. You had Brett Kavanaugh in high school with his other buddies that they were spiking and drugging girls through punch and literally lining up in the halls and waiting their turn to gang rape these girls that they had drugged. And it was happening almost on a weekend basis, every weekend, almost every weekend, a regular basis. And that evolved into, well, I never saw him spike the punch, but he was holding a red Solo cup. And I saw him give a red Solo cup to somebody once. And, well, he actually wasn't in line, but I did see him in a hall walking once. And then all those people that were supposed to corroborate all those stories fell away one after another. And all these channels that gave this guy so much attention, when I thought it was the topic that was serious. It's not. The topic of sexual assault was what we were dealing with in the Kavanaugh case, the outrageous charges. And again, no corroboration. And very specifically, one of the few times Republicans as a group actually did something right and handled it with the proper seriousness the topic deserved. Media was all over it when they thought that they were bringing Judge Kavanaugh down, now Justice Kavanaugh. They were all over the topic because it's so outrageous, and it is when it happens. But all of a sudden, now that there is not only felony charges against Michael Avenatti, domestic violence charges against him that he's facing, we now have a European actress has filed a restraining order against him. The Democratic Party hero, the fake news CNN hero, the conspiracy TV MSNBC hero. Anyway, it's not clear whether this is the same woman who accused him of beating her up last week, but if it's not the same woman, then Avenatti now has two women accusing him of some kind of abuse, because the woman who filed the restraining order against Avenatti days after he was arrested for domestic violence is an Estonian actress who apparently recently played a bit part in Ocean's 8, and I won't give her name out, although it is in the papers. I'm credited with other roles in movies with Kurt Russell and so on and so forth, but it's unclear whether it's the same woman. So we don't know. And I'm not saying this. I don't have anything against Avenatti. I really don't. I do have something against people that are hypocrites, because if they really cared about the issue with the same ferocious, you know, coverage and rush to judgment and no due process and no presumption of innocence that they showed in the case that politically they aligned with, they would be covering this story the same way, and they're not, and they won't. That's my only point. I have no idea what happened in the Avenatti case. I hope to God, I never want to hear that something like this is true. Just because you have political disagreements with somebody, you don't have to wish them ill in their life, and I don't. But it is a little scary. We also have some fire. We're gonna get into the issue of the California fires again today. We have Russiagate information we're going to get into today. We have a lot to get to. Look, I don't know why I'm feeling a need and a compulsion to have to explain this, because I'm watching coverage of some people and I'm thinking, guys, you didn't get it. You're not understanding. Every midterm election, every one of them is a headwind and a huge challenge for the party that won power in the White House 2 years earlier. Every single time. Here's a question. How many times in the last 100 years has the president that won power 2 years prior, facing his first midterm, picked up seats in the U.S. Senate? Well, there's only three times. And Donald Trump is one of them. Three. That's it. When you look at the actual numbers of, you know, putting aside George Bush, it was that election took place through the prism of 9/11, and the country was pretty united at that point, not really looking for any type of change, and I think very sober for everybody. But if you look at what happened to in 1994, Bill Clinton was first elected in 92. 1994, for the first time in 40 years, the Republicans captured the House of Representatives. Newt Gingrich led it with the Contract with America. Now, that year, Bill Clinton lost 8 Senate seats, 8 of them. And he lost 52 House seats for a grand loss of 60. In 2010, Obama lost 6 Senate seats, and he lost 63 House seats, a net loss of 69. Some of the highest numbers ever. When you look at the president going out, helping Marsha Blackburn in Tennessee, played a big part in that race. I don't think either DeSantis or Rick Scott win Florida, but for the president going down and doing all the rallies he did down in Florida. And that's a pickup for the Republicans, net pickup of one with the retiring Bill Nelson. So I give Trump a lot of credit for deciding to get in the game, take the risk on, and fight for his agenda, knowing that the House was not only facing the normal headwinds that any president would face, but is also facing 44 retirements, which means people have no idea who's on the ballot, in what case. They don't know anything about them. And then, of course, he campaigned heavily, and I think he played a big role in Missouri for Josh Hawley winning that race. And Michael Braun winning in Indiana, defeating incumbent Joe Donnelly. Claire McCaskill defeated as the incumbent in Missouri. Heidi Heitkamp defeated as the incumbent in North Dakota. And I think the president played a big role in all of that. and with the increased seats. Now, we do have one more seat. Is it next Tuesday? Linda, I got to get the exact date, but we've got a race in Mississippi that is crucial at this point for the Republican Party and for people to get out and vote in that runoff election in Mississippi. Everything else now has been called. There's two House races outstanding, both led by Republicans, Mia Love and Woodall in Georgia.
You're right, Sean. It's Mississippi is November 27th, which is next Tuesday.
All right. Next Tuesday is this Mississippi race, and that is an important race. This is, you know, a lot of people think the elections are over. People in Mississippi got to understand it is not over. And you have Mike Espy is the Democratic candidate in that race. He's been dogged by huge ethical questions over the course of his political career. Former congressman, former agriculture secretary during Bill Clinton's term. He's facing off against Cindy Hyde Smith in this runoff election after neither candidate secured a majority of the vote. That's just the way they do it in Mississippi. But anyway, Espy facing scrutiny over his lobbying work for Ivory Coast under its then president, currently on trial before the International Criminal Court for crimes against humanity. And Espy said he stopped lobbying for this government less than a month after taking a three-month contract. Espy claimed at the time to have received only $400,000 of the $750,000 contract. Okay. Why were you with him in the first place? Got a signed Foreign Agents Registration Act supplemental statement that Espy had to file. Look, Espy, if he wins in this race in Mississippi, it makes it that much harder for the president to get good Supreme Court justices through, good cabinet members confirmed. This race, Cindy Hyde Smith's race, matters a lot. And I hope a lot of you that listen to Mississippi are going to be going out to vote. That is an important race and the last one that will be decided. But anyway, so when you compare, just to follow through, full circle here, Obama net loss, loses six Senate seats, 63 House seats, net loss 69. You look at the first midterm of Bill Clinton, eight Senate seats, 52 House seats, net loss 60. You look at Donald Trump, we got pickups in Florida, we got pickups in Indiana, North Dakota, Missouri, huge. And a net minus 37 in the House. Well, that's not 63. That's not 60 of Clinton. And the president nets Senate seats. So you have, you know, minus 35. Now, minus 35 compared to minus 60 and minus 69 is a massive difference. And what they were all claiming to the big blue wave, they thought they were going to win the House and the Senate. It didn't happen. The president couldn't campaign for 435 members of Congress. It's impossible. So he did the part that he could do. And where he went, he played a big part in helping Republicans hold the Senate. And that means that's great if we have Supreme Court nominees. That's great in terms of stopping whatever insanity they want to do in the House. They want to play impeachment games. That's never going to happen. They're wasting their time and probably disgusting the American people. And by the way, all the investigations that need to continue are going to continue in the Senate. Lindsey Graham and others.
Decompressing on a teeter inversion table for a few minutes a day is a great addition to anyone's daily routine to maintain a healthy spine and active lifestyle. And if you have back pain, you need a teeter to invert every day. Over 3 million people have put their trust in Teeter. They've been the best known name in inversion tables since 1981. And for a limited time, get Teeter's brand new 2019 upgraded model of the inversion table, the Teeter Fit Spine, with bonus accessories, stretch max handles, and easy reach ankle system, plus a free vibration cushion for the ultimate muscle relaxation. Teeter inversion tables have thousands of reviews on Amazon. They're rated at 4.6 stars. And with this deal, you'll get $150 off when you go to teeter.com/USA. Get the new 2019 Teeter Fit Spine inversion table, plus a free vibration cushion, free shipping, free returns, and a 60-day money-back guarantee at teeter.com/USA. That's TEETER.com/USA.
All right, as we roll along, Sean Hannity Show, there's one added benefit I didn't mention, and that is it's going to be, you have no idea how fun and entertaining it will be knowing that Democrats have no power. They can do nothing. Going out, the president fighting hard, saving the Senate, building up his margin, his lead there was absolute political brilliance, because it doesn't matter what they do or say, they can't do a thing. By the way, how pathetic. There is a poll out. Let's see. Newsbusters picking up. Investors Business Daily picking up. Recent survey that keep proving the liberal left press. And now everybody's seeing it. You know, even the financial press, their editor, pretty much all of journalism now leans left, according to a study. Arizona State University, Texas A&M, they questioned 462 financial journalists around the country, followed up with 18 additional interviews. They worked for the Wall Street Journal, New York Times, Washington Post, AP, number of newspapers. What they found surprised them. Even the supposedly hard-nosed financial reporters were overwhelmingly liberal. Of the 462 surveyed, 17.6 call themselves very liberal. 40.8 describe themselves as somewhat liberal. Okay, that's like 60%. Whatever you add it up to, 58.5% admit being left of center. Along with that, 37% claim to be moderate. Well, what about the mythic conservative financial journalists? Well, in fact, a mere 0.46% of financial journalists called themselves very conservative. You know, the thing is, I know it frustrates us and it drives us nuts, but the reality is we've, thank God, Rush started in 88, Fox started in 96. We have social media, the internet. We don't need these people anymore, thank God. We get to control things ourselves. And we do make better decisions. All right, 25 till the top of the hour. So knowing that the media are just an extension of all things Democratic press office, that just now is a fact, I don't think anything gives it away more than they don't care about, for example, they really cared about the issue of sexual assault and allegations of such. You would hear them talking about Keith Ellison, Bill Clinton, now the Avenatti case, and you don't, they ignore it and want it to go away. But if it helps them, if it's politically expedient, they can tear somebody down that they don't like and don't want on the Supreme Court, then it's a whole different them. You see this all the time. I mean, just rank hypocrisy on display by them on pretty much every issue. If they really cared about the issues, they don't. That's why you never heard any of them comment about Juanita Broderick, Paula Jones, Kathleen Willey, that they never would. You know, that's why, you know, they, if you watch, for example, how sad is it that you have one reporter, Jim Acosta, that makes everything, every moment he has the mic and gets to question Sarah Sanders or the president, it's all about him, makes definitive statements, starts debates, president gives answers. That's not enough. How many times does a president have to say after one person asks a question, enough, enough, enough? A girl comes to take the microphone. You won't relinquish the microphone. I mean, and create a firestorm that you can be so rude, so disruptive, even to your own colleagues that are in the room that similarly, like you, have prepared questions that they would like to have answers to. Anyway, so the office of Sarah Sanders, press secretary for the president, sent out to CNN and I guess every news organization rules. And they had, this is what we've come to, kindergarten. Rule number one, a journalist called upon to ask a question will ask a single question and then will yield the floor to other journalists. Two, at the discretion of the president or other White House officials taking questions, a follow-up question or questions may be permitted. And where a follow-up has been allowed and asked, the questioner will then yield the floor. Yielding the floor includes, when applicable, physically surrendering the microphone to White House staff for use by the next questioner. Four, failure to abide by any rules one through three may result in the suspension, revocation of a journalist's hard pass. Okay, so this is where we are with the press. And there is, you know, I was talking about this last night. This is the amazing thing about this. There's no obligation of any president, any press secretary to ever, ever have to answer anybody's questions. It's that simple. They don't have to answer any questions. Anyway, so the Facts First network of CNN, they, I guess they feel like they have a victory. Let's see what happens in the future. But The president, rightfully, I think, has been critical. There's been a one-sided partisan witch hunt. They don't talk about the fact that Hillary Clinton bought and paid for Russian lies and that those lies were disseminated as propaganda to mislead on purpose we, the people, in the lead-up to the 2016 election. They don't talk about the FISA. They don't talk about that phony dossier that even Christopher Steele can't say is true in any way. I don't know, 50-50, it's raw intelligence, I don't know, under the threat of perjury in an interrogatory in Great Britain. And still it becomes the bulk of information presented before four FISA court judges, four FISA court applications. I mean, think about it. They don't tell the judges that Hillary bought and paid for it and they knew it. They don't abide by the law and their own protocol and verify what they're presenting to get a FISA warrant. In this case, on a Trump campaign associate, Carter Page. Unbelievable. Anyway, so that's the new, you know, that's the new media for you. They don't talk about those things. They only talk about anything that is full of Trump hate. Then they're interested. Anything else, they're not a whole lot interested in. Back to the caravan here for a situation. Now, the Department of Homeland Security, we have this judge, Obama-appointed judge, issuing a temporary restraining order against the White House, claiming that the president does not have the authority to block thousands of illegal aliens from trying to crash through our southern border. Well, it happens to be the law of the land. This is what we mean when we talk about judicial restraint, legislating from the bench. We need co-equal branches of government. We need checks and balances. We don't need some Obama-appointed judge to rewrite the laws because of his political views, but that's exactly what happened. And especially now that the Department of Homeland Security and Mexican officials themselves have pointed out and have identified at least 500 criminals that are have literally blended in with the migrants in the caravan and are traveling with the migrant caravan on the other side of the border in San Diego. But now you've got thousands of people in Tijuana, and the people of Tijuana, they're using the words they felt like there has been an invasion of their town, of their city, where they live, and not respecting Mexican laws and Mexican sovereignty. You know, it was always funny getting lectured by Mexico over immigration policies when they themselves either put people in jail or threw them out of the country immediately. So the 500 criminals, that was made during a conference call with reporters when officials asserting that most of the caravan members are not also women and children, as they now have had an opportunity to study the long caravan. And all legal options are on the table. We've been negotiating with our partners, etc. There's a Forbes magazine piece out there that illegal immigrants cost taxpayers $18.5 billion a year in health care costs alone. Well, that's a pretty significant amount of money. When you look at, there was another study about a week and a half ago that said every single illegal immigrant costs the taxpayers $70,000 a year. Well, we would at some point like to pay down our debt and stop the deficits and live within our means and grow the economy. We still have Americans that have been left behind. I know we're making progress. We have 4.5 million more jobs created, 8 million Americans out of poverty and off of food stamps, a dramatic turn of events since the Obama years. But we're still not there where every American that wants a job can have a job. I'm for immigration, but I'm for illegal immigration. You know, they've invaded ABC, NBC, literally ignoring what the people in Tijuana are saying against the caravan. I mean, they're saying it. They're not reporting it. And this Obama-appointed judge barring the U.S. from enforcing the asylum ban. And look, it's if the president hadn't acted earlier, we would have a problem. You know, U.S. troops fortifying the barriers to stop where they're using this razor wire that is the real deal. Because why? Because if all these people come across the border, what happened? What do we do then? If we had a wall, they never would have come. They would come and go through the process legally like everybody else had to do. And why is it so wrong that we have laws in our country that if you don't obey them, unless you're the Clintons or a Democrat, we do have a dual justice system. You know, they get away with everything. We don't get away with anything. But, you know, that's got to be the first prerequisite if you want to be in America and an American. I will tell you this, what's going on, this is really interesting, the infighting that is going on among the Democratic Party, and it's getting more interesting by the day as we watch, you know, House Democrats want to launch an Ivanka email investigation at the urge. There's no similarity. Ivanka, yeah, she might have used her private email on emails. Nothing was classified. Nothing. Abby Lowell, her attorney, went over all of this. Number two, she deleted nothing, not 33,000. She acid washed nothing with bleach bit. She busted up no devices whatsoever. She had nothing on a private server that was built. And her knowledge of this as a new person, newbie in Washington versus Hillary, who was sending out notes to her own staff not to use private email, are very distinct and different things. Now, we have, anyway, there's a new report out that 70% of Americans say illegal immigration is a serious problem. Of course it is. Remember before the election, after the election, and Hannity and these guys on Fox, they're whipping everybody into a frenzy over something that's never going to happen. They're thousands of miles away. Well, not anymore. Now they're in Tijuana. I was Obama saying that out on the campaign trail. Unbelievable. What's interesting is... Goldman Sachs warned Democratic House victory would tank the stock market. Pretty interesting. We've had a couple of down days. That's why, you know, one thing that's happening was in the New York Post, while the press keeps pretending that Trump-supporting Republicans are Americans' number one purveyors, the number one purveyors of hate, they've been kind of silent on the fact that several of the Democratic Party's top 2020 presidential contenders won't say where they stand on the, quote, boycott Israel movement. And Alan Dershowitz is right. Where was the widespread condemnation of Louis Farrakhan? Why does a former President Clinton sit next to Farrakhan or one seat down from Farrakhan? How is it that, you know, you see, are any of these guys going to now... Cory Booker, Spartacus, is he distancing himself from the boycott Israel movement? They're our closest ally in the Middle East. But anyway, so far, White House hopefuls for 2020, Kirsten Gillibrand, Bernie Sanders, Kamala Harris, 57 co-sponsors, an Israel anti-boycott act would penalize attempts to cooperate with international efforts to boycott Israel. Where is everybody? Unbelievable. It shouldn't surprise you. Anyway, looking ahead, here's the headline in The Hill today. Fight for a Democratic leader is a battle for the party's future. Nancy Pelosi, New York Times, Nancy Pelosi's last battle. Donald Trump saying again that if need be, he would get Nancy Pelosi the vote she needs from Republicans so that he's him saying that she deserves the position. Ocasio-Cortez on Democrats opposing Pelosi. It doesn't reflect the party's diversity. Very few people of color. And, you know, she's now signaling, though, some support is so she might now be on Team Pelosi in the end. Here's what's really I saw this on Breitbart. This is pretty interesting because the one name that was mentioned as a possible opponent to Nancy Pelosi is a congresswoman by the name of Marsha Flood. And the headline is anti-Pelosi rebels. I'm sorry, what are you saying in my ear?
Marsha Fudge.
Yeah, Martha, what did I say?
You said Marsha Flood.
I'm sorry, I was thinking, I correct myself. Marsha Fudge. Anyway, the headline is, excuse me, anti-Pelosi rebels hit a snag as Marsha Fudge under fire for a letter defending a judge accused of murdering his wife. So I'm reading this article anyway, and I'm thinking, okay, who leaked this? And I'm thinking it has to be the Democrats. They don't like that she is willing to challenge Nancy Pelosi. Now, I don't have any evidence of that in any way, just my gut instinctive reaction to this. But these anti-Pelosi rebels in the House Democratic Conference, you know, were pushing Marsha Fudge hard. They wanted her. She's a Democrat from Ohio. And she's now under fire in a big way today for defending a judge now accused of brutally murdering his wife. And this comes after she had attacked Pelosi as an elitist, signed a letter with more than a dozen other Democrats vowing to oppose Pelosi for speaker on the floor of the House early next week and floating a potential run for speaker herself. Specifically, what has emerged is a letter she wrote in August of 2015 defending a former Cuyahoga County, Ohio judge, Lance Mason, during his sentencing over the brutality beating of his wife, Aisha Frazier. And Mason ended up spending 9 months in prison for the 2014 assault on Frazier, and after his release from prison was hired by the Cleveland mayor, Frank Jackson's administration, in the minority business development mode. But the assault was so brutal, he punched his wife 20 times, smashed her head into the dashboard of their car while their kids were watching in the back seat. Holy mackerel. The couple's children were in the back of the car at the time. Now, the account from the Cleveland.com gives more details on the timeline and events. Anyway, long story short, Marcia Fudge wrote backing this guy comes a result of more than 20 years of friendship. I'm saddened and disappointed at where we find ourselves today, writing to the prosecutor. The behavior he displayed is out of character, totally contrary to everything I know about him. I commend Lance for immediately recognizing, getting help, entering counseling, etc. So now I'm thinking, this had to be a Democrat. Who else knew this? I don't remember that. And why did it just get released now? Anyway, if you want to read it, it's up on that. I mean, that's Democrats now using their own tactics they always use against Republicans against each other. All right, as we roll along, actually, the president now, I'm watching, it's given a very entertaining press conference as I guess he's headed to Florida. He will be campaigning for Cindy Hyde Smith in Mississippi, and there's been a lot made about a comment she made off the cuff that she's apologized for profusely, saying that she's been a great senator, will be a great senator, also saying that he's not giving up at the death penalty for the people that killed the Khashoggi reporter guy. He's not going to blow up the entire relationship with Saudi Arabia over it. Well, more as we continue.
Just to say it one time again, and I say it all the time, there was no collusion. I didn't know the president. There was nobody to collude with. There was no collusion with the campaign. And every time you hear all of these, you know, 12 and 14, it's stuff that has nothing to do. And frankly, they admit these are not people involved in the campaign. But to the average reader out there, they're saying, well, maybe that does. It doesn't. And even the people involved, some perhaps told misstories, although in one case the FBI said there was no lie. There was no lie. Somebody else said there was. We ran a brilliant campaign, and that's why I'm president.
Did you direct Mike Flynn to discuss sanctions with the Russian ambassador?
No, I didn't. No, I didn't. No, I didn't. But Mike, excuse me. No, I fired him because of what he said to Mike Pence. Very simple. Mike was doing his job. He was calling countries and his counterparts. So it certainly would have been okay with me if he did it. I would have directed him to do it if I thought he wasn't doing it. I didn't direct him, but I would have directed him because that's his job.
Mr. President, your FBI nominee said if someone in a campaign got an email about Russia like the one that your son Don Jr. received, that they should alert the FBI rather than accept that meeting. Is he wrong? Also, were you misled by your team in not knowing about this meeting?
As far as my son is concerned, my son is a wonderful young man. He took a meeting with a Russian lawyer, not a government lawyer, but a Russian lawyer. It was a short meeting. It was a meeting that went very, very quickly, very fast. Two other people in the room, I guess one of them left almost immediately, and the other one was not really focused on the meeting. I do think this, I think from a practical standpoint, most people would have taken that meeting. It's called opposition research or even research into your opponent. I've had many people, I have only been in politics for 2 years, but I've had many people call up, oh, gee, we have information on this factor or this person or, frankly, Hillary. That's very standard in politics. Politics is not the nicest business in the world, but it's very standard where they have information and you take the information. In the case of Don, he listened. I guess they talked about, as I see it, they talked about adoption and some things. Adoption wasn't even a part of the campaign, but nothing happened from the meeting. Zero happened from the meeting. And honestly, I think the president press made a very big deal over something that really a lot of people would do. Now,
number two, knowing something about hacking, if you don't catch a hacker, okay, in the act, it's very hard to say who did the hacking. With that being said, I'll go along with Russia. Could have been China. Could have been a lot of different groups.
So President Donald Trump is ambivalent about, or not ambivalent,
no,
you're
I'm
just not sure.
No, we have to find out what happened. I'd love to find out
but
what happened.
But you don't think
it's Russia. I can tell you one thing. Had nothing to do with us. Had nothing to do with this. And everyone knows it. And by the way, even my enemies on your show said we haven't found anything that the Trump campaign did wrong.
All right, those cuts all go back to the big news in the issue today, first reported by CBS, that the president has answered and given written responses to questions of the special counsel, Robert Mueller. And, you know, I went through this whole list last night on Hannity on the television program, and with the help of my friend Greg Jarrett, who's going to join us here in just a second, John Solomon, all these people from the very beginning breaking these stories, all that has been ignored by Mueller is pretty unbelievable to me. And we have a really, you know, this is and has been a witch hunt from the beginning. And, you know, all of the left-wing media's obsessive coverage, you know, soon they're going to need a new conspiracy theory to obsess over, because it looks like this is now entering its final days and there will be no in-person interview between the president and Robert Mueller. That takes away the likelihood of any perjury trap or a subpoena or a court fight for a year that would eventually make it to the Supreme Court. And the president, by submitting written answers to the special counsel, you know, if they really just did their homework, as we were just pointing out in the clips we just played here, that answers. The president's been answering all of those questions in multiple interviews, denying consistently that there was any collusion, any knowledge of any collusion, any conspiracy with Russia. And we know the president has consistently denied any knowledge as it relates to anybody on his staff or any coordination. Now, we know with the convictions of General Flynn and George Papadopoulos, nothing to do with collusion at all. Same with Michael Cohen, same with Paul Manafort, nothing to do with collusion. But there are questions about real collusion that did take place. And I hope that the same treatment, where we do have evidence, is given the same amount of scrutiny as it relates to Hillary Clinton and the bought and paid for phony Russian dossier. And why didn't, if we really cared about Russian interference, why didn't we dig down deep? Because Hillary paid to have someone coordinate and produce Russian lies about Donald Trump that were later disseminated to we, the people, before that election. Why isn't Mueller investigating the fraud perpetrated on the FISA courts, A, by withholding pertinent information that it was Hillary's paid-for dossier, that it was never verified, never corroborated? There's four separate frauds committed on four separate FISA court applications. Why aren't they investigating the coordinated effort by the deep state Democrats to leak this information, to propagandize the American people? You know, whatever happened to investigating the Strzok Page, you know, media leak strategy, their insurance policy, Comey's leaking of information for the purpose of getting a special counsel, leaking what's called circular reporting leaks of the bought and paid for dossier to create an atmosphere where everyone's frenetic thinking, oh, there's all this evidence. The source was the same unverified, uncorroborated, phony Clinton bought and paid for dossier whose own author in an interrogatory in Great Britain wouldn't even stand by it. And, you know, finally, hopefully we get to the end of it. But then in comes January and, you know, Shifty Schiff, the liar, the biggest liar in Congress, wants to start all over again. I mean, they're not putting America first. Anyway, joining us with reaction, Greg Jarrett, Fox News legal analyst, author of the number one New York Times bestseller, The Russian Hoax, The Illicit Scheme to Clear Hillary Clinton and Frame Donald Trump, John Solomon of The Hill. Remember, it was people like John and so many others, too many to name, that got the ball rolling. And piece by piece, we've been able to see that the very thing Democrats thought they had against Donald Trump were the very things the Democrats themselves were involved in. So I think actually this was the best case scenario for the president, Greg, but they already had his answers. So this is like a dog and pony show to me.
Donald Trump has been extraordinarily cooperative and transparent and forthcoming, and has talked openly and publicly, as you well know, about all of the issues that Mueller will be asking him. I mean, just think of it, 1.4 million pages of documents the Trump campaign produced. 20 White House staffers gave interviews to Mueller's investigators, even more from his campaign. And again, Trump has talked repeatedly and has provided these answers publicly. On the subject of collusion, he's repeatedly said, I didn't coordinate or conspire or collude with any Russians. I'm unaware of anybody who did. You know, Michael Flynn, did you direct Michael Flynn to talk with Russians during their transitions? And the president would say, I didn't, but my staff did. Of course they did. It would be irresponsible not to. You know, the Trump Tower meeting, the president has
That's standard operating procedure for an incoming administration, for somebody that has been appointed to a top position to meet their soon-to-be counterpart. That makes sense.
It's what all incoming transition teams, including Obama's and all his predecessors, did. The Trump Tower meeting, the president has said, I didn't know anything about it in advance. Mueller knows the answer to that. And, you know, Russian hacking, the president has always said, I didn't know anything about it. I didn't participate in it. And so Mueller has the answers to all the main questions.
Let me bring John Solomon in here. You know, John, there are other issues that are going to come out of this. There was
Absolutely.
A Rowan Scarborough piece out in the Washington Times on Sunday about how conservatives and the president are demanding a probe into the Clinton-Steele Moscow links themselves. And
right.
I know you've been working on this story.
Yeah, I can tell you one thing that I learned today, Sean, and I'll bring it on your show tonight as well. On December 5th, there is a plan for House Republicans to hold a hearing into the Clinton Foundation and its foreign operations. And one of the things that they're considering doing is bringing in the prosecutor who's supposed to have been looking at this issue for the last 15 months and saying, what have you found? You've had 15 months. There's been lots of media reports that suggest there was wrongdoing. There were audits. There are other things that look to be crooked, and we want to know what's going on. I think you're going to see a lot of this next year. I think you're going to see Lindsey Graham doing some great work as the new chairman of Senate Judiciary Committee. You're going to see Chuck Grassley at Senate Finance still dig into some of these issues. And I think we'll learn for the first time in December what this guy Huber, this U.S. attorney in Utah, who is named as a special prosecutor for all things Clinton, what he's turned up. And we may be surprised a little bit by some of the
evidence. Are we ever going to get the answers to the Clinton Foundation and the amount of monies that were paid to them? Are we ever going to get information to
I believe
Uranium One questions that exist that we haven't gotten to the bottom to? Look, if the Democrats, if their decision now is that they want to spend the next 2 years not legislating but investigating, well, the Republicans still have the Senate, and the president can still unlock the keys and unredact FISA memos and applications and Group of Eight information and 302 information that I think would probably not be in the best interests of many, many people involved in wrongdoing as it relates to these issues. Would you?
I agree. I think the loss of the House has no bearing on the ability of the president to completely exonerate himself as he's going. But the first step in that exoneration is when Bob Mueller says there was no collusion. That's the most important one for the country. And I think we're getting closer to that moment when Bob Mueller might make that declaration. And after that, then I think you go back and you unravel through the declassification all of the abuses that occurred in the FBI, the political abuses. So
why,
that they
if
never
Mueller's
occurred.
Mandate had more to do with this than how somebody fills out a loan application, why hasn't he done it?
Yeah, because the way Jeff Sessions and Rod Rosenstein set this up, they had the IG and Huber take on everything that wasn't Russia-related. And the only things that are related, you know, Mueller has kept a narrow scope, which is, was there collusion? And in the process of trying to prove collusion, you try to flip people with other crimes. That's an old mob tactic, right? But at the end of the day, there's not been a single prosecution of an American that has proven anything close to collusion, and we're 2 years in the investigation. I think we can assume there won't be.
Yeah. You know, let me get back to the only thing that it seems that there's a possibility that they might be going after, and I interviewed him on the show a while back, is they seem to be obsessed with Roger Stone and Jerome Corsi, right. And you know, the fact that they were looking or seeking or getting word that there might be some type of information that I guess eventually came out from WikiLeaks. When I interviewed Julian Assange, he swore that the information never came from Russia or never came from any state, and we never got any answers on that. I'll ask you about this on the other side. I mean, could that boomerang? I think that in a big sense it could, but time is going to tell. Greg, the two people that Mueller seems to be focused on the most here, Jerome Corsi said that he believed that he was about to be indicted for lying. Again, lying. We're back to that again. I guess speaking to the FBI or anybody ever is a dangerous situation for anybody. And Roger Stone, and apparently there was an exculpatory email that was revealed by NBC that might have blown that theory out of the water. And this idea of bringing Julian Assange to the United States. The one thing I always thought about Assange is he would know where that information came from, wouldn't he?
He probably would.
And he could probably prove it, couldn't he?
He could, but I don't know if he would. But look, going after Jerome Corsi, if it's
why would the New York Times that printed the same information not be in the same trouble?
Well, because ever since the Pentagon Papers case, we don't prosecute news organizations for releasing classified information, even if it was stolen. That's been the standard.
So then WikiLeaks is claiming that they're a media organization?
I don't know if Julian Assange would qualify, but he might.
He might. What do you think, John?
Yeah, listen, I think at the end of the day, the Roger Stone prosecution, if it occurs, is going to look like the Mike Flynn prosecution and the George Papadopoulos prosecution. It's going to be a false statements case having nothing to do with collusion with Russia. Now, Democrats might try to spin it and saying, well, if you colluded with Assange, maybe you were like colluding with the Russians. But that's a farcical argument. And if you make that case, then you have to accuse every media that ever used a document from Assange or used a document from Snowden. Remember, newspapers won Pulitzers writing off of Snowden's stolen documents. You have to make the same accusation. It's a silly and farcical thing. They'll probably try it. But at the end of the day, the most you're going to get out of this from what we can tell is a false statements case. And that's going to be the story of the Mueller prosecution. It's all going to be 1,001 false statements and not a whole lot of meat on the original core allegations.
Mueller could never win a false statement case if he ever prosecuted. It requires knowledge, intent, and willfulness under the statute. Right. If your recollection of something is different than the FBI or Mueller's interpretation, that's not a crime.
All right.
Thank you both. Your work. We'll have more on this. John has something breaking tonight he's going to share with us. He can't tell us now. He's putting the finishing touches on it. Correct as we speak, John?
That's correct. We'll be talking about it tonight.
All right. We'll see that tonight on Hannity. We'll break it. That's all coming up 9 Eastern. All right. We'll take a quick break. Ami Horowitz, he went and joined the migrant caravan. And he got a lot of tape, and he learned a lot of things. He's going to tell us about it when we get back. And then later on, the latest in the Battle of Tijuana, the people in Mexico are livid and furious and feel that they've been invaded with all the migrants now descending upon their town, their border town with the U.S. We'll have the update on that and much more as we continue. All right, 25 till the top of the hour, 800-941-SHAWN, toll-free telephone number. We see what's happening now. Thousands descending on the town of Tijuana. On the American-Mexico border, chaos is now broken out. Real anger now spilling over with residents furious and livid and apoplectic, feeling their sovereignty, their borders, their country, their town is not being respected. And they themselves are saying Trump was right and this is an invasion. And now how do we take care of these thousands of people? And you're uprooting our life, our lifestyle, our towns, and you're not respecting Mexican law. It's fascinating to watch, but all those people want to get here to America, and that's not going to happen. They're not going to get the asylum claims that they've been told by whoever that that's going to happen. And the more dangerous part is the Department of Homeland Security now identifying 500 people that are criminals that have somehow melted into the crowd and meshed themselves into the crowd in the hopes that they will come off as a migrant, the vast majority of which we now know are men, not women and children, that we're also told now are purposely being put in the front of the line so that the cameras will see and pick up their pictures and images and not give what the real breakdown is in terms of the amount of men versus women and children here. Our friend, filmmaker, documentarian, Ami Horowitz, well, he wanted to find out what was really going on behind the migrant caravan, getting so much media coverage, and he went and embedded himself with the migrants. And here's what he heard and reported on.
I'm here in southern Mexico in the state of Oaxaca, an area of Mexico which is riddled with narco crime and cursed with extreme poverty. It's also where the camp and base of the caravan is for the night. They're settled here as they continue their trek on the United States.
Despite the framing of the caravan as being full of women and children, the reality on the ground is quite different. Approximately 90 to 95% of the migrants were male. The major narrative being pushed by the press has been that the migrants are leaving Honduras because they are escaping extreme violence and that their lives are under constant threat, setting up the strategy that they would be able to enter the U.S. by asking for asylum. There's a massive logistical effort underway, akin to moving an army, and is clearly costing someone millions of dollars for the transportation, food, water, medicine, and services that are being provided for the members of the caravan. It's a supply chain that's being delivered by an army of trucks, which are all necessary to keep this enormous group moving forward.
This is a truck actually carrying generic Gatorade.
The Mexican government also seems to be sending police to escort the dozens of buses and trucks that are ferrying the migrants and supplies along the route to the next destination. Ever present among the thousands of migrants are workers of Pueblo Sin Fronteras, clad in black t-shirts and colored vests. Pueblo Sin Fronteras means people without borders. They're the ones that seem to be most involved in organizing and mobilizing this caravan. The organization, as the name implies, is looking to create a world without borders, which seems to be one of the reasons why they organized this caravan in the first place, to flout American sovereignty. This is one of the organizers on the ground with Pueblo Sin Fronteras, and she explains how they help the migrants game the U.S. immigration system.
We're working on collaborating with a lot of organizations to do large-scale legal orientation so people understand their options for refugee and humanitarian protection here in Mexico, as well as their rights to request asylum in the States, provide mass presentations about Know Your Rights, they call them Know Your Rights presentations, like to bring people together and make sure they understand that they can organize and they can fight for their rights.
Are you helping them on how to speak to reporters?
And training folks on how to deal with threats. So like I was telling Fox News here, just like asking really scary questions.
We made a kind of unsafe environment.
Yeah, of course.
How many of you are there? How many from the organization? From
hundreds.
The United Nations has been very active with the caravan from the moment it crossed the border. Several of its agencies are on the ground with them and have expended a great deal of time and money on helping the caravan move along. I made a call to Maria Ruby from the Office of the UN High Commission for Refugees. Maria, now you guys have been on the ground with the refugees from the moment they crossed the border, correct?
Yes, that's right. That's right.
It's a number of organizations, right? Not just the High Commission for Refugees, but also UNICEF and some other UN organizations that are helping them, correct?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I can tell you that, for example, in Tapachula, in Chiapas, we were the only one that is still there. Now here in Mexico City, you see more organizations. But yeah, that's right. I mean, we've been there from the very beginning.
I mean, after Trump's consistent attacks on the UN, this is kind of a great way to stick it back in the eye of Trump, huh?
Yeah.
At the base camp, there's a mobile hospital stocked with enough pharmaceutical drugs to make Keith Richards blush. There's also plenty of doctors and nurses attending to all the migrants' needs. While it does seem as the majority of these migrants are friendly and simply trying to make a better life for themselves and their families, there's an undeniable element of the migrants who are violent and dangerous. And many of the migrants know this, and some have experienced it. It seems to me that there are leftist organizations that are using these migrants as a tool to push a certain political agenda, which includes the weakening of American sovereignty and our border security. And unfortunately, these migrants are going to be caught in the crossfire.
All right, that is filmmaker, documentarian, good friend of the program, Ami Horowitz is with us. How long did you stay down there?
I was in Mexico a total of a week, and I was embedded with the migrants for about 2 days.
Okay, I want to talk more specifically about that. Let's talk about what you saw because the DHS is now saying, and Mexican officials are now confirming, that about 500 criminals have decided to embed themselves in the caravan in the hopes that they can sneak across the border or get some type of asylum. What did you see in terms of the organization, people, and the main reason and why they're coming here, and what did you learn?
Well, I mean, I don't even know where to start. There's so many layers to this onion, it's difficult to know where to begin. But let's start with what I didn't see, okay? Let me tell you what I didn't see. I didn't see groups of large amounts of women and children. There's no question that even though when you watch the BBC, CNN, MSNBC, the New York Times, Washington Post, every image you see, every video you see, the framing is very specific. They're always trying to show large amounts of women and children. And here's the reality. It's 90 to 95% men. Although I need to apologize, I don't want to assume their gender. But that's what it seemed like to me. And the amount, the disingenuous, you know, dare I say, fake news reporting on the caravan, it goes well beyond the demographics. It goes about the fact that they're trying to push this agenda, that this is some kind of organic thing. It's not being created by an organization, that they're leaving because of violence in Honduras. Yet every single person I asked, when I asked them, why are you coming to America, their answers were uniform. They want a better life. They want new jobs. They want education for their kids. Things that you and I want to have. But the reality is, are we responsible for the entire world's needs? I mean, there's billions of people who want better lives for themselves. Are we responsible for the 3, 4, 5 billion people in the world who want a better life for themselves? I would say not.
I mean, we're spending a lot of time now trying to help the forgotten men and women in America out. We've got enough problems in our own towns, small towns and cities, and I'm definitely happy about all the progress. We spend a fortune on these countries, and literally, you know, where does all this money go to help people? There's so much corruption in so many of these countries that you never know if the money we're giving generously from the taxpayers ever ends up where it's supposed to go. And with that said, we cannot absorb the world's population. It's impossible. I support legal immigration. But the fact that we don't have the wall built shows that creates danger for people on both sides of the wall. If what they did in southern Mexico, they do here, our border patrol will use force to stop them if they run across the border. I don't want to see anybody hurt, assuming that they're the good people that just want a better life. So it's amazing to me that they've been told. What about the organizational groups you had touched on in your piece?
Yeah, that's really, really important. Because, again, the narrative that you're hearing from the mainstream media is this was some kind of organic thing that sprung from the earth. And these people just one day all decided to group together and move to the U.S. Nothing could be further from truth. This was organized from the beginning. It was organized getting them through Mexico, and it's organized now to get them into the United States. And there's a group called, I mentioned in the video, Pueblo Sin Fronteras. And what Pueblo Sin Fronteras is, and again, the word, what does it mean? The name of the organization is Peoples Without Borders. They do not want borders. They want anybody to live anywhere they want at any time.
I guess in America we call them Democrats, as they want open borders.
You know, you say that jokingly, but
all good humor is rooted in the truth. They don't want borders. They don't want enforcement. They don't want ICE. They want to eliminate that. And you know, obviously very different positions from where they were just in the Obama years. They say what they need to say to be politically expedient, but we know what they really want.
That's exactly right. But the organization is it's amazing. First of all, my estimation is it cost somewhere between $7 to $15 million to get them from Honduras to the United States. One of the things I observe and I witnessed is that the majority of this trip, they're not walking and pushing strollers like the mainstream media want you to believe. You're talking about dozens of tour buses that line up and take these people from one location to another location. There are trucks, there are semis, pickup trucks, full of food and water and medicine, ferrying them from ferrying the stuff from location to location. It's incredibly
organized. Who's paying for all
organized.
This?
Sorry?
Well, who's paying for it all?
Well, that's the ultimate, that's the $64,000 question, and one that's not easy to uncover. But I do know this. Pueblos Sin Fronteras, right, has a couple of front groups in the United States. There's a group called Centro Sin Fronteras and La Familia Unida. These are left-wing groups based in Chicago, which has funding for Pueblos Sin Fronteras. And if you look at their filings, you see a number of people who have donated to them. The money is funneling through there, but we can't know exactly where the money for this particular operation is coming from. Is it Soros? Is it other left-wing groups? We're not sure. But I know this, $50 million did not come from a wellspring in Honduras. It's coming from the United States of America. That we have no, there's no doubt about.
All right, Ami Horowitz, good report. Thanks for sharing it with us. We appreciate it. You remember, Ami does this a lot. He just goes down right in the middle of a situation, assesses it right on the ground, talks to people, gets answers. That's real reporting. Maybe some of these fake news networks would consider, these left-wing news networks would consider doing that once in a while. And you'll say, well, Hannity, why aren't you down there? Well, I actually might go down to Tijuana if this continues. I've been down to the border 12, 13 times. And seeing it up close and personal and how real it is and what it means for our country and our safety and our security, it's pretty profound. And we try to capture those images so you can see for yourself and make your own decision. All right, let's head to our busy telephones here, 800-941-SHAWN, if you want to be a part of this extravaganza. Jeff is in Texas. Jeff, hey, how are you? Glad you called, sir, and welcome to the program.
Hey, Sean, glad to be on. It was about a month and a half ago when I saw that 22 million illegals that are already living here, and that's kind of a monster number, and I wanted to try to put that in perspective for you in a couple short comments. Let's just say that you and I jump into a helicopter, and we fly over an outdoor stadium sporting event. Let's just say there's 55,000 people there, and we take a still shot. Take that home, blow it up, and get a red Sharpie, and put a red dot on every 14th person, because that's what the ratio is, 1 out of 14. You're going to have 4,000 people in that stadium that should not be there if the 22 million is spread out equally, of course. And I just did one more comment on 9/11. On 9/11, if you were to board an airplane with 200 people on there, and again, if the 22 million is spread out evenly across the United States, you're going to see that there's going to be 14 people on that airplane that should not be on that plane. That's just two little quick comments. I want to put in perspectives for the viewers to know how monstrous that 22 million number is. Appreciate being on.
All right, 800-941-SHAWN, toll-free telephone number. We have news roundup, information overload, a little more news making as it relates to the caravan. Then we'll get to your calls, final half hour of the show. My last show before Thanksgiving, one of the things I'm thankful for is all of you. You make this possible. You've made Hannity the number one show on cable. We can't thank you enough. We appreciate it. We're going to fight to earn your trust every day. And I am chomping at the bit. For January, you have no idea the great, fun, entertaining things and, frankly, investigative things that we have going on. Really good stuff. Quick break. Right back. We'll continue. Sean Hannity Show.
The Klan was what we would call today a domestic terrorist group.
Why? Why would we call them domestic terrorist group?
Because they tried to use fear and force to change political environment.
And what was the motivation for the use of fear and force?
It was based on race and ethnicity.
Right. Are you aware of the perception of many about how the power and the discretion at ICE is being used to enforce the laws? And do you see any parallels?
I do not see any parallels between
I'm talking about perception.
Officers and agents.
I'm talking about perception.
I do not see a parallel between what is constitutionally mandated as it relates to enforcing the law.
Are you aware that there's a perception?
I see no.
Are you aware that there's a perception?
That puts ICE in the same category as the KKK. Is that what you're asking me?
All right, news roundup and information overload hour. That makes my blood just boil every time I hear Kamala Harris. Well, the perception of the ICE or the KKK and the perception of they're the same among people. And I don't know anybody that has that perception at all. And you think it's an easy job every day to put your life on the line? We lose border agents, they get injured, they get hurt, they get shot, they get killed. What do you think they're carrying guns for? And they do they're trying to protect the country from the influx of drugs and human trafficking and other elements. It is not an easy job, and I know because I've been down there 13 times. It is beyond the pale that it basically goes unreported by the rest of the media. It's because they have the same agenda. They're basically all tied at the hip together. Anyway, 800-941-SHAWN, toll-free telephone number. You want to be a part of the program. Before I get back to the calls, I wanted to do a quick check-in with Representative Andy Biggs. He's in Arizona's 5th District to talk about what's going on there. I mean, we're watching in Tijuana, the anger overflowing now into the streets. The people of Mexico saying that they feel like, and the people of Tijuana feeling like this has been an invasion of their town. Thousands of people now congregating there. They don't have the facilities to take care of them. And they're saying that they think it's an invasion, that Trump was right. And what's going to happen with them? And tensions now getting, it's getting pretty intense down there. What I predicted and others predicted could happen here and may still happen here. And Donald Trump acting early seemed to, at least put us in a much better position preparing that this could eventually happen while Obama and others were mocking it. Congressman, welcome to the program. What are your thoughts?
Thanks, Sean. Good to be with you. Well, I agree with you. What we're seeing in Tijuana is exactly what I think you'd see here. There's a congregation. It's an invasion. The people there recognize it as an invasion, and folks want to demean that term, but let's face it, you've got a mass of people coming. They're not supposed to be there. They're trying to force their will on the people of Mexico, people of Tijuana. People of Tijuana are rejecting that, and they're calling effectively upon the Mexican government to do something, which we've been trying to get done for quite some time as well. So. Yeah.
Where are we now in terms of, I know the military has been down there. I know they've been putting up miles and miles of razor wire, not just barbed wire, but this is the real serious wire that is very difficult to remove. It's not wire that you can actually get around. People are, it's amazing the ways people can circumvent any barrier, but you'd have to dig a pretty deep tunnel, I think, to get around that. That's number one. Number two, I think that would be pretty hard to do, and it would take a long time. And number three, though, at least the president got there before it became an even bigger issue, like we saw at the southern border of Mexico when they just charged through the fence and Mexican officials couldn't stop it.
Right. And he's done a good job, I think, of projecting the power and the position of the United States of America. And he needs some help, though, from Congress. Congress needs to. I have a bill on building the wall. McCarthy does. There's other bills that are out there to build the wall. We need to do that immediately. But beyond that, we really need to change and reform the asylum law as well, so that people who seek asylum, they have to seek it in their own native country and go to the U.S. embassy there. If we do that, then that will also provide disincentives to come here. It's the border, and you've been down there many times, Sean. I get down there quite a bit, and it's amazing. They can go right over the baller fence that they have now. We need better fencing. We need more fencing, and we need to support
Is there any chance in this lame duck session we'll fund the wall fully?
Yeah, in the lame duck session, there should be a chance. I was promised that that's when we would do it. I believed it would have helped the midterm outcomes if we had done it before midterm, but they told me we're going to do it in lame duck. But you know what, Sean? I'm fearful that the Republicans are going to put the lame in lame duck.
Yeah, well, I think they're going to try. But, this now is crucial. The president said maybe it's time for a shutdown. And I think if this would be an issue that I think Republicans should take a stand on. At some point, put it this way. If we had the wall up, the caravan never would have even begun. And there would be no chance to precipitate a crisis where innocent people could get hurt. Right now, that's the reality. If they got to our border and they went to an area where there was no barrier and they all decided to charge across it, that would be a confrontation I wouldn't want to see happen to anybody.
Right. Well, Sean, it's a national security issue, one. Number two, it's also a humanitarian issue. They're coming up there, which tells us that somebody's funding this, because that kind of a crowd moving, they have to have some support from somewhere. But it's a confrontation you don't want to see, and a border wall there with additional forces on the border, that sends a disincentive message to people to come here. And when we were forced by the federal courts to let the last group of people loose in the country, that gave the impetus to this group that's coming up now. And if we stop them now, it will prevent further caravans and big groups from coming forward.
All right, Congressman Andy Gibbs, thank you for being with us. I will keep everybody updated on this as we go forward. Appreciate your time. 800-941-SHAWN is our number. You want to be a part of the program. Michael is from Washington. Michael, hi. How are you? Glad you called, sir.
Hey, Sean. Thank you for taking my call. I really appreciate it.
You bet.
The whole back and forth between the president and the press is, in my opinion, is quite demeaning. And if the president has to post a placard, quote unquote, house rules, okay, similar to you go into, let's say, a billiard parlor, right, and it's the house rules are this, or you go into a locker room, not responsible for loss of stolen items. If the house rules have to be posted, and at the start of every interview, Sarah Sanders says, before we start today, please notice the house rules posted here. Ask only one question at a time, and so on and so forth. I mean, has the situation devolved that much? And there's little or no professionalism from the press corps that the president has to post house rules?
Well, it's needed, and I went through a whole history of this last night on TV and earlier today, so I won't regurgitate that now. But, yeah, I mean, it's kind of – they necessitated this. They brought this hostility upon them. They brought the rules upon them, and now there are rules of engagement. Now, if you go back to the judge's ruling on Friday, the judge didn't take this case or believe that there was a First Amendment issue. Number one, CNN had correspondence on the ground. It was about one in particularly regularly rude reporter that has an agenda, and it's about himself, and it has nothing to do with getting answers to significant questions of the day. Asking a tough question is not a problem at the White House. The president does spend a lot of time with those people in the press and answers more questions and has spent more time by a long shot than Obama ever dreamed of. They want their time on TV to build themselves up or to push whatever narrative they have. He wanted a debate. He didn't have a question. Now we have rules, standards, and due process for any reporter that doesn't abide by them. They'll be asked to leave. And at some point, if I was them, I would think about moving the press office the heck out of there and put the pool back in. This way you can have a swimming pool in the White House. It's built. It's there. And they just covered it up with the White House press corps office and area. So, but over time, I think as long as everyone's treated equally, there's no obligation for the president to answer any questions, or Sarah Sanders for that matter. It is performed as a public service and as a means of communicating with the most powerful office in the world, with the press. We believe in a free press. Doesn't mean they have to do it. It means they do it to help get their message out, help explain things their way. And it's just become basically a game of gotcha. And it's a dog and pony show. And we get very little information out of it that we can use unless you watch it all yourself and understand where it's coming from. All right, quick break. Right back. We'll come back. Your calls coming up straight ahead. 800-94-SHAWN, our toll-free telephone number. Right, as we continue back to our busy phones, Melody, California. Melody, hi, how are you? Glad you called. Our thoughts and prayers with all our friends in California. So much damage, devastation, loss of life, all these families, over 1,000 families missing loved ones. It's very scary. We're all watching, hoping, and praying that these people are found, these fires get out, and hopefully we can take the proper measures to ensure this never happens again.
Yeah, hopefully the president has put his smartness in it, so hopefully they'll listen to him. But Sean, I'm calling because I'm very concerned for my country for the first time in my life, like Michelle Obama for the first time. I would like to know, why is the media allowed to lie and deceive the American people to stigmatize a sitting president with no consequences?
Well, I mean, you ask a good question. Why aren't they held accountable? Because it's like they speak with one voice. You want to know why most in the media hate talk radio, hate some of us at Fox News and opinion, on the opinion side of talk of Fox and those that host talk shows? They hate the fact that, A, we challenge all that they do. We are a check and balance on them.
But Sean, they were able, with this strategy, they were able to flip the House. They have deceived half of the electorate. We rely on the media to be a well-informed electorate. They deceived half of the electorate, and they flipped the House. That is real consequences.
But let me slow you down a little bit here. History is very, very important. Every single president, you know, since the beginning has faced headwinds in midterm elections. So, and I can't emphasize this enough. If you look at Barack Obama in 2010, his first midterm, he lost six Senate seats, lost them. And it turned out he lost 63 House seats. Bill Clinton lost eight Senate seats and 52 House seats. Donald Trump, let's see, picked up Senate seats, adding two, maybe three, and when it all is said and done, and literally saved the Senate. He helped Rick Scott pick up that seat over Bill Nelson in Florida. He helped Marsha Blackburn with her victory. He helped Josh Hawley in Missouri defeat incumbent Claire McCaskill. He helped defeat Heidi Heitkamp and Joe Donnelly in North Dakota and Indiana, respectively. And these are massive victories. He has a net loss of 35. Now, 35 versus Clinton's 60 net loss, including eight Senate seats, and Obama's 69 House Senate losses, it is dramatically better. Headwinds happened only three times in the last 100 years. Has a U.S. president in his first midterm picked up Senate seats? Donald Trump is one of them.
About what could have happened if he didn't have the media lying and being the mouthpiece of the Democrat Party, which is probably the Democrat Party, which is probably the mouthpiece of Soros. I'm concerned that we're not understanding sedition is occurring in our country. And I think we need to rise up and we need to deal
with
it.
Listen, I think more, maybe I'm a little, I think people are hip to media abusive media bias now than they've ever been. People have found the alternative. Rush first syndicated in 1988, you know, creating an entire new wave of information gathering for people. The internet, the same. Social media, the same. Fox News going on the air in 96. People know the difference. People are hip to it. People see that they have an agenda. People know CNN hates Trump. People know MSNBC is radical hard left. People know that the networks, that they've got an agenda. People know of the unholy alliance between the Democratic Party and the media. And there are few exceptions. And to the, you know, great credit of a discerning public, they seek out what they believe to be, what they see to be different and truthful. And that's why we tell news in a very different way. I report news very objectively many times, like in following the California story. We investigate people like Obama and the deep state stuff they'll never do and expose things they'd never expose, although they should be doing it. And then we give strong opinions about the issues of the day, except we don't claim that we are not giving opinion when we are. Anyway, I think we're hipper, but, you know, yeah, I mean, I'd like to win everything. But if you look at it through the prism of history, it was a ripple. There was no wave. You know, I think I got to explain this tonight, but I don't think people are getting it. You just gave me a great idea for TV tonight. Thank you. All right, 25 till the top of the hour, 800-941-SEAN, toll-free number. You want to be a part of the program. I am working tonight. We have a very important show. We've got a lot on now. Mueller, it looks like, now entering the final phases with written answers from the president. That means there's no subpoena shutdown. Means also all these answers. We know the answers to every question he could possibly ask. But now the real questions about Russian influence might actually be asked and, in fact, even investigated, as we have been calling for now for nearly 2 years. Which I am hopeful of. So Thursday is Thanksgiving. Linda, what are you doing on Thanksgiving? You cooking a turkey?
I'm hosting.
Are you, you're hosting.
I am hosting.
Well, you know who's hosting this year? Sweet Baby James is hosting.
Oh, Jesus.
And Aunt Teddy.
Oh, no, Jesus.
But, what?
Find the fire extinguisher now.
Oh. Well, good thing Uncle Sean stepped in. So I have my Masterbuilt Butterball turkey fryer. So I'm going to be cooking turkeys in there. It only takes about 2 hours.
I should rescind that. So if it's Teddy, I'm okay. But if it's Uncle James, forget
What's
about it.
What's wrong with Uncle James? Now, Uncle Sean stepped in because I've been doing some renovations, so my house is a total mess. But anyway, long story short, so they graciously offered to host everybody. The whole family's going to be there, and, you know, it's always fun to see everybody. So, but I'm gonna fry the turkeys. I don't have any interest ever again in a turkey that's not deep fried. I don't, I mean, the difference in taste.
What if it was wrapped in bacon?
Well, I can wrap it in bacon
what
as soon as I pull it out of the oil.
What,
it worked
what if
perfectly.
It was wrapped in bacon?
Yeah.
And injected with a butter garlic sauce.
A butter garlic sauce?
I'm just saying. How do you feel about that?
No, you can listen, adding turkey to adding bacon to anything works, but I am deep frying my turkey. And you can use this for so many other things. But if you make the turkey the traditional way, I don't care how many times you baste it. It's not going to be juicy.
That's why you inject it.
Okay. I'm injecting it also. Just so
no,
you
you're
know,
submerging it.
Pants.
It's actually different.
No, I also inject it as well with the butter and garlic that you're talking about.
So you've turned into a scientist.
Yes. No, remember, I was 13 years old and cooking lobsters and steaks and... You know,
was that in between doing the cocktails?
Alfredo and I did that all when I was 13.
So you washed the dishes, you made the lobster, you served the drinks.
I did.
You were
That's
very
correct.
Busy as a 13-year-old.
I was a busy and I loved it. Anyway, so what are you doing for the holiday?
I'm hosting and I'm having some folks over that don't have any family, so they're coming to my house and my
You're
brothers
bringing
are coming.
Strangers over, or what?
Of course.
People you don't even know you're inviting over.
Everybody knows your family behaves better when you bring strangers into the house. They are on their best behavior. They don't
so you're
going to
go down
to,
and like say, hey, you're not busy today. Why don't you come to my house?
Hey,
is
you.
That how you're picking
hey,
them?
You. I got a turkey with
hey,
your name
you.
On
I got a turkey. You hungry? Come on. Let's
I
go.
I got some sweet
Let's
potatoes. Come on over.
Well, where do you find these orphans that you're just bringing into your house?
Let me tell you something. My first
you're
one of my.
Oliver saying, please, mom, oh, I'd look some more.
No one talks like that in my house. I will tell you, one of my favorite memories ever was when I was first in New York and I had hosted a Thanksgiving at my apartment, and I had everyone over who was not going home for the holidays, and we called it turkey and tequila, and it was a blast.
Okay. So
is it
I'll
okay? No reaction
so
to that?
Year,
hello.
So you know Eric Seidel now, who was Sluggo.
Literally
in
no
Atlanta.
Reaction to that? Turkey and tequila? We're just moving on? Seriously?
Yeah. Well, I met the family from Jose Cuervo, and they actually sent me up a bunch of tequila. And I'm not the biggest tequila drinker, but I like it more than I ever did. So it's my first year in Atlanta. I think it's 1992. And I have no place to go on Thanksgiving. And I literally go over to his house. And every woman there had kids on Ritalin. And I had done a show the week before about how we're over prescribing Ritalin to kids. And I said, if I was a kid growing up today, they'd put me on double, triple, quadruple doses of it. These kids don't need it. They're just being normal kids. And we're kind of drugging these kids so that they behave. It's like chemical behavior of them. I was being a little naive and stupidly provocative. Obviously, some hyperbole.
I cannot
hyperbole.
Imagine you doing that is so out of character.
So I got cornered by all these women in his house. Oh, man, I got cornered and beaten to a pulp that I don't know what I'm talking about. And on top of it, I'm a conservative and they were liberals. I don't think I may have said, you know, Sluggo, I think I've had enough. We didn't even get the turkey. I just got the hell out of there.
Oh, yeah. No, once you get to politics, it's over. There is no talking about politics at Thanksgiving dinner. None.
It was nice of him to invite me. I will say this, Thanksgiving, and this, I don't know what it is about human nature. We should give thanks every single day of our lives. We should absolutely be thankful for the lives we live, the people that we love, the things that we have, the country that we live in, the heroes that fight for us. We should be on our knees every day that God has given us this, the greatest, best country God gave man, and literally the land of milk and honey and opportunity and freedom. And you see it when you see caravans of people just they'll walk thousands of miles because they so desperately want what we want. And we don't do it. You know, we get caught up in the daily grind of the day and we forget to be thankful and appreciative. The fact that we're healthy, the fact that we're together, the fact that we have a roof over our head, the fact that we can, in this case, do this job that we all love every day because our audience is the best there's ever been. And they give us this microphone by supporting the show and listening and supporting our advertisers and the same on TV. And I just wanted to take a minute as we head into my Thanksgiving holiday. I won't be here tomorrow. And just say thank you to all of you. I thank God for the blessings of having, you know, things happen in my life that I never deserved. And I am so appreciative that I can't even really put words to it. And I want that to be the story of every American, every person. You know, in 2016, we kept talking about the forgotten men and women. And now look what happened. 13 million more Americans on food stamps under Obama. 8 million more in poverty under Obama. What do we have? 4.5 million new jobs in America. We have record low unemployment in 14 states. Record low unemployment for African Americans, Hispanic Americans, Asian Americans, women in the workplace, youth unemployment. Our military returning home, getting more jobs than they have in 20, 30 years. I'm thankful that America is turning around. 8 million fewer people on food stamps and in poverty now today. That's 2 years. I'm thankful for that. I want every American to have what, you know, the blessings of freedom and liberty. And, you know, you're right. I started out as a dishwasher and a paperboy and a cook and all those jobs that I did. And I've been blessed with beyond measure, more than I ever deserve. I'm blessed with the greatest people I've ever worked with in radio and television, and an opportunity, we think, to put our stamp. You know, for all of you that think if you're going to go home this weekend and you're going to have to deal with your stupid liberal relatives that don't know anything, I just want to warn you, when we come back, we got the lame duck. Next year, I promise you, as soon as we hit the ground running on the 2nd or 3rd of January, let me tell you what's going to happen. It is going to be the most entertaining 2 years exposing how insane people on the left are. I promise you what we have planned from day one of the Pelosi House is worth the price of admission. All right, glad you're back with us. End of the show here, wrapping up. And my Friday as we head into the Thanksgiving Day weekend. And we have an amazing Hannity with all this breaking news tonight. I will be working. We'll see you tonight at 9. I want to send God's great blessings to you, your family, our thanks to God for all the blessings we have and all we've been given, and to our troops abroad and the people that fought, bled, died, and sacrificed to give us freedom. We have so much to be thankful for, and I'm truly thankful to all of you.